Hey, welcome back. In this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, we've got RT and our Quadro. We're taking a ride on the Ray Trace Metro Exodus. We'll be spoiling Intel. We'll be Alienware gaming with lots of gear. And I've got myself talking in my voice, Apex Legends Mania, and more next. Dag nabbit, I hate when that happens. I left the stream up, it starts piping in my ear, and now I'm getting the 3-second delay. These are rookie moves, you know? What is up? Oh, my goodness. Anyways, it's the show you've come to know and love so well, with lots of geekdom in it and folks stumbling over the interwebs. Dave Altavilla here for Hot Hardware, and I am joined by a gaggle of geeks, a bunch of folks, which is kind of nice, I must admit. It's like a family affair here. We've got Paul Lilly with us tonight. Paul, say hello to the happy viewers.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. There you go. And Britt and Chris Getting from the scenic state of Maine join us tonight. Yeah. The dynamic husband and wife duo. How you guys doing? How you kids doing? The youngins of the crew, I might add.
Cold.
Yeah.
We're cold. It's about 18 degrees here right now.
We're into March, so snow is getting at the point where it's kind of overstaying its welcome, and you know how that goes.
There's no place to put it.
Yeah. We got a foot plus drop on Monday, was it? Yeah. Yes. Sunday night into Monday, and that I'm just tired of it at this point. And, you know, we did actually, it's been a pretty forgiving winter by and large, but you know, when it comes this late in the season, you're like, okay, enough.
Yeah. You know? It's about time.
Yeah. So yeah, no, we'll complain. We could live in warmer climates, but we don't. We're the hardy types up here in the New England states. Paul, you moved down to a warmer, temperate zip code.
Yeah, you guys talk about snow. I don't know what the hell you're talking about anymore. I was in Michigan, so I could sympathize back then. But down here in Tennessee, it's nice. I mean, it's cold today, but it was sunny outside. I don't have any of that white stuff out there.
Dude, Michigan, that kind of winter will kill you. That's even cold out there, like crazy cold. Like you must be the thickest skin guy in what, you Tennessee now?
Tennessee, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yep. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You go down there and you're not wearing a jacket ever. They're going, it's chilly out, Paul, and it's like 65 degrees. You're going, no, it's not.
Yeah, they're sweating. Bundled up, and I'm saying this is swimming weather up in Michigan, so
Exactly. Well, we won't talk about the weather too long here because we've got a lot to chew through tonight. We've got tons of stuff to talk about. Marco is not with us. He is traveling. He's actually spending some quality time with our friends at Intel. And that's all we can say about that for now. But there'll be news coming for sure. Lots of good stuff that he's conjuring up with those Intel folks. He's a traveling man, and we've got the rest of the crew, the fun kids, with us tonight, and we will go through a bunch of headlines that should be interesting to folks. I'm gonna crack me a beer, by the way. Chris, are you imbibing anything tonight? I've got a little Wachusett Larry here, buddy.
Yeah,
Larry.
We got well, you've got the Gagan brothers,
the
Refueler Wheat, and I've got the Scotch Ale from Allagash with Scotch barrels.
We have a bit of a hodgepodge.
Very nice, very nice. And Paul, you're alcohol free currently.
Nobody told me to bring beer. Had I known, though, you know, I would have stuck to the Bud Light. I'm one of those guys.
Ah, yes,
I'm a dilly dilly.
you're right, and you like Pilsner. There's nothing wrong with a little Pilsner once in a while. It's crisp and refreshing. All right. Well, let's shift gears to talking about tech, because we could talk about beer, but this isn't a beer show. It's fodder for the future, perhaps. But yeah, Chris, we put up a little article this week that I think folks should take note of if you're into enthusiast computing and gaming, and specifically NVIDIA's new GeForce RTX line of products. We have been looking at the first titles that have been enabled by this new technology, NVIDIA's GeForce RTX 20 series graphics cards with onboard ray tracing and DLSS or deep learning super sampling. There was a quick flash of the game we checked out this week. GeForce RTX Performance and IQ in Metro Exodus. I don't know, John, if you can throw that back up on the screen. So this is Metro Exodus, the follow-on to Metro 2033 and Metro Last Light after that. This is another installation in the series and the genre of a post-apocalyptic, you know, nuclear winter-infused world, dark world of baddies and good guys shooting them up. But it's got some pretty cool eye candy courtesy of NVIDIA, right, Chris?
Yep. So with the Metro Exodus, it kind of takes a departure from the previous games, which are pretty much all underground, and it gets you up to the surface to explore the post-apocalyptic world. So there's a lot of different environments you're in that can really take advantage of the RTX features, different lighting and stuff that can really look beautiful. It's kind of more open world, but still on a track in a lot of ways, gameplay wise. So it definitely has a story to tell more than something like, you know, Skyrim that's just going to drop you in a place and let you go wild. So, you know, it's a lot really good pacing from that perspective. But as far as the tech goes, Shannon, our editor, went through and pretty much benchmark the hell out of it with every combination of settings you can think of with RTX and DLSS optimizations to see kind of where the sweet spots are with different graphics cards from the 2080 Ti to the 2070 and even the 2060 and different resolutions. So you can really get a feel as far as if you want like balls to the wall quality, glitz and glam. None of the cards really are going to hit that 60 FPS sweet spot on this title. I mean, it's very intensive at 4K at least. Even with RTX off and DLSS on with the 2080 Ti, we're looking at, you know, an average of about 4950 FPS, which is certainly playable, but not something that is going to get deliver the best experience. You might want to turn down a couple settings. If you move down to from the extreme preset to ultra, you can just about get to the 60, and by high, you're doing pretty good. Yeah. The frame rates are at least more consistent anyways. What's really nice to see here is that DLSS is doing a good job, especially at the higher resolutions, 4K and 1440p, of getting you performance back with RTX on. Especially looking down at the high quality preset with the 2080 Ti, RTX on high and DLSS on actually gave us the best average frame rate of all the tests at 4K. So it is good to see those optimizations in place that you can get the eye candy and not take a huge loss. And looking at the image comparison between DLSS on and DLSS off, you're not really losing any detail. There's not any real weird artifacting left. So it's in a good place. It's promising to see. But as far as realistically gaming on it, if you want the RTX, you're probably going to be at 1080p. If you have a 2080 Ti, you can probably push 1440p with DLSS on. But it's definitely going to abuse a lot of systems for now. So we'll see how the next generation of cards comes through. But there's a lot to unpack with this game in the future, I think.
No, it's an interesting case study because we've used at Hot Hardware many times through many a graphics card reviews, previous iterations of Metro, Metro Last Light, Metro Last Light Redux. We've used those as benchmarks because it is such a GPU crusher. And there's no question that the game itself, you know, just is one of the better looking titles for sure. It's dripping with lots of detail. It's very well done. It is it's a very popular series, I think, because of storyline and then the visuals. And this isn't the type of game where you're looking at you know, needing, frankly, 70 or excuse me, north of 60 or 144 hertz refresh rate to have it playable, you know, sub 60 is probably fine because you're not running and gunning, you know, really hard like Battle Royale mode. We're going to talk about Apex Legends later today. That's really not what this is about. It's a little bit slower paced. There's certainly times where you're duking it out with evil demons and you need to be quick, but mm-hmm. you can get away with a little bit lower frame rate. What is interesting, Chris, and you pointed out with DLSS, initially when this game launched, it was pretty buggy as far as DLSS goes. There was a loss in quality that was perceivable. Certainly the gain in frame rate was there, but it wasn't mm-hmm. doing the AA with the kind of crispness of real anti-aliasing. And so folks were kind of, you know, up in arms about it. This is what NVIDIA is going to give us. This is DLSS, you know. Well, they came back real quick, and I think it's 4A Games is the developer, worked with NVIDIA and came back real quick with a patch that improved that dramatically. And as you noted, our image quality comparisons, I couldn't tell the difference. Could you?
Right. No. And another note on DLSS, because it's on those tensor cores, it is in a way frame rate limited because it's on a frame by frame basis. So that's why you're seeing DLSS just not available on higher end graphics cards like 2080 Ti at 1080p, because it's pushing so many frames that the DLSS is just going to cause more. It's going to become tensor core limited on its frame rates, and it's not actually going to end up helping you. So that's why they do turn it off.
Right. In those cases. Right. You've got a 20 series card in house right now, right? In a machine. Yeah, from Dell, maybe.
Yep. Can I say or?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not embargoed. Yeah,
okay. All right. Yeah, I've got the Aurora R8 in with the 2080 non-TI and 9700K. So yeah. I've been playing a lot with Battlefield 5 with it, and it's doing a great job at that. I haven't fired up Metro Exodus yet. We'll see. Yeah. Maybe I can.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it'd be a cool one to look at. That might be some, because we've got some numbers now. You could maybe use those. But Brittany, did Chris let you get your paws on the 20 series graphics there on the machine and let you game a little bit?
Not quite yet. He's been doing a lot of testing, but I think once the testing is maybe over, then I can do my own testing and we'll be good.
I think you should. I think you should.
I think so.
Yeah, you know, you always get that. I know the pushback. I mean, Marco gives it to me all the time as well. He always gets like some of the best stuff on the computing side. And it's like, I'm like, hey, why don't you send me one of those cards? He's like, I still got a benchmark. I'm still working here. Sure, buddy.
Right. It's like, oh yeah, of course you have a million tests. Why, mm-hmm. why wouldn't you have anything else?
Stop bogarting the hardware, Chris. No. Mm-hmm. Paul, have you gotten any 20 series goodness in house yet? No, not yet. Not for us, probably.
No, I think we're working on something, but no, nothing at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've got some stuff on the way for you. You are not safe, that's for sure. Looks like we get John Sugar in. Digital Foundry's managed to almost not quite 60. Okay. Looks like some guys are pushing pretty close to 60 frames per second in 4K with DLSS, certain settings. But interesting. This is just one of those games. I think 4K is still a niche resolution. I think 1440p mm-hmm. these Very days is so. Probably the sweet spot, right? Is that what you would you agree with that, Chris?
Yeah, I think 1440p is where I want to be right now, especially with mm-hmm. the higher refresh rate, because I'd rather, well, maybe not in Metro, but in a lot of competitive games, I'd rather see more frames than prettier frames. So yeah. And the resolution difference between 1440p and 4K isn't really enough to make me need 4K over 1440p.
Yeah.
But to each their own.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would agree. And I've got a 34-inch G-Sync panel, an Acer Predator G-Sync panel that is 3440 by 1440, and it's lovely. There are occasions in that size panel where I would like to go to 4K in the desktop, but I would probably not game at it. And, you know, unless, I don't know, I do want that high frame rate. And I think these days, it's always a trade-off of that. You know, you've got, you can either pick your eye candy because the game engines are only getting better, more realistic, and certainly with ray tracing. Let's talk about the ray tracing side of the equation now. Did you get a chance to peer at the pixels there and look at the lighting? Because I did. And in some scenes, I was noticing, you know, some really cool effects that looked natural to me. And then there were other parts where I was like, oh, it's kind of dark, like the real world probably is over there in post-apocalyptic Russia, right?
Yeah, there definitely seems to be more dynamic range going on, you know, blacker blacks and brighter brights, but it does look more natural overall with the way the light falls off, reflects, and kind of glows, which is really nice. And it's part of what I think I've said before, that RTX is really going to find its sweet spot when it reaches its way to lower tier games where they don't maybe have all the crazy billions and trillions of polygons on screen, but they can really take advantage of some simpler shapes and gorgeous lighting to really sell their effects. So, you know, I think that lighting is in many ways the biggest part of the equation in making something look nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am excited to see RTX develop across the whole hierarchy of games.
Well, I remember, especially when Elder Scrolls Skyrim came out, I remember downloading a mod just to make the lighting look better. So I think it definitely can affect your overall gameplay and experience. And that's
without even ray tracing.
Yeah, and that was not even, yeah, that was without it. So I think it can definitely, it's a while ago, but I think it can definitely affect your overall game experience.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So is that your genre of choice? Are you more the storyline, real time type threat?
Yeah, I tend to play games that are offline. Just because for me, I look at, for me, gaming is very much about relaxing and enjoying the experience. And sometimes the competitive games or the battle royale games are just, they're too much, too stressful for me at the moment. So sometimes I go back to those more offline games, just if I'm in that particular mood where I'm trying to relax from the end of the day, like a day like today.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know, I'm with you right there. I'm the same way. I like a game that immerses me in storyline, that gives me goals to achieve, that, you know, sort of motivates me and pulls me into the story and motivates me to complete the, you know, the next quest and all that great stuff. Right. And yeah, I've always been, you know, more interested in that than the running and gunning. I know Marco, you know, he's not with us today, so we can dare at him. No, but
poor Marco.
He'll love this. No, his favorite pastime. Actually, I think he plays online too a little bit. Was Left 4 Dead. That was his guilty pleasure. And his thing was just, yeah, I'm pulling off a sawed off shotgun and just wasting zombies as fast as I can.
Oh, that can be completely fun. Yeah, it's have to definitely be in the mood, I think, for it. They're different experiences for different times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Paul, what's your genre, Paul? What's your favorite game type? And then we'll move on.
Probably sports. I like the NBA 2K franchise, except for the in-game purchases. But yeah, I've played a lot of Skyrim, and I still play it every now and then. I'm like Brittany, where I prefer the single player games versus the battle royale that's real hot now.
You don't like microtransactions and loot boxes? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, I'm so silly that way.
Are you sure?
Yeah, John so Sugar with really Ray Trace Candy Crush.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. With the NBA 2K, they've made it into almost like a role-playing game. It's not really, but they've put that element in there. Right. But they've pushed the virtual currency so hard that it kind of ruined what it could be. Yeah. And I understand why they do it, because they're just making money hand over fist like they all are. But it could be so much better than what it is.
Yeah, yeah. And John actually points out something that's funny. Maybe it's the new Crisis, Metro Exodus. Essentially, you know, 60 frames per second at 4K is not possible, he says. We have a new Crisis to meme about. So can it play Metro with ray tracing and at 4K? That might be the new meme. I don't know. But anyways, let's move on a little bit. And it's interesting. And I'll just sort of cap that off, that whole segment there. What's interesting to me about this, and I think you guys will agree, is that we've got something new with respect to graphics to talk about. It's not just, hey, right, better frame rate, you know, same DX12 game engine, you know, we've actually got some new effects. So hopefully this is the beginning of something new and exciting. And what you need to get there is something that Marco took a look at this week. And we'll just touch on this quickly because I think it's a I don't want to say an acquired taste. It's a specialized taste, I would say. And that's the pro graphics arena. So if you are the brilliant creatives that actually, you know, develop game engines and models and do design work, you know, real CAD design work. Well, yeah, make money with your graphics cards. You might actually be interested in NVIDIA's Quadro RTX 4000, which was launched recently. We have a review up now. Turing-powered Pro Graphics. There it is. The first NVIDIA Turing-powered graphics card that we've gotten in-house, and I think it's one of the first on the web. that is the RTX 4000. It is the follow-on, the successor to its Pascal predecessor, which was Quadro P4000. So if you compare these sort of apples to apples, what are they? Now we've got an RTX 4000 based on Turing. We've got 2304 CUDA cores versus 1792 CUDA cores in the P4000. You've got, you know, tensor cores now. You get 288 versus zero in the P4000, the Pascal, the predecessor. And then you've got ray tracing engines as well. So 6 gig arrays of performance versus a half a gig array in NVIDIA speak performance. And tons of compute power, 7.1 teraflops and 8 gigs of GDDR6 and 2x, almost 2x, I should say, the memory bandwidth, 416 gigabytes per second versus 243. So really an impressive card in the mid-range of the pro graphics segment. This is a sub $1,000 card. And then when I say sub $1,000, it's actually $950. So it's not cheap. It's not cheap. But for a professional graphics card, which is certainly much, you know, it's rarefied air, if you will, versus right, consumer graphics cards, you're getting all the validation and driver set and a little bit of special tuning in some cases on the card itself, you know, the hardware side, just small tweaks in the GPU that are specifically dedicated for pro graphics workloads, whether you're dealing with things like Maya, Cinema 4D, all these pro graphics applications. So folks that are into this, they know what this is all about, and they're probably pretty excited because this thing smokes the previous gen by a lot, the P4000, if you look at some of the benchmarks and sort of what I would say are, you know, just some of the industry bellwether benchmarks, SpecVUperf, for example. You've got things like 3ds Max in there and Creo. And so, you know, it's dramatically faster. Luxmark is in there. And let's see what else. There's some VR benchmarks in there. V-Ray is another one. It's, you know, whether you talk about OpenCL rendering and compute or, you know, pure visualization and rendering applications like 3D Studio Max and you know, Cinema 4D, real pro applications, the card actually performs really well comparatively to the previous gen. This is what's more interesting, I think, with this is what developers are going to do with it moving forward, which is taking those RT cores, taking those tensor cores and doing things like, you know, a little bit of machine learning with them, a little bit of ray tracing now that they didn't have before, you know, or they did, but they waited, you know, days, hours to render.
Send it to the render farm.
Yeah, now you've got a specifically dedicated, you know, rendering engine, you know, on this GPU. So, Chris, I don't know if you had any thoughts on that. I know you dabble a little bit more in the big iron than some of us do, but Marco kicked the tires hard on that, and I think he just joined us in the chat. Hey.
Hi, Marco.
Yeah, I think his ears were burning.
Yeah. Probably.
But yeah, there's, I mean, there's no SLI connections on this, so it goes right in the dumpster, right?
There are no SLI connections. It's got, let's see what it does have for connections. It does have stereo connection as well as the USB-C connection for VR applications. So yeah, it's so yeah, let's see. Yeah, VR optional display connectors, virtual link. That's what I was trying to think of. But you know, I think, yeah, Quadro Sync. I think SLI for these applications, you know, it's not something. I mean, you can load a couple of these in the machines and they're all gonna crunch on the workload as well.
Right.
It's not the same. It's different.
So I have a question, Dave. Since Marco's not here, you'll have to do. If I'm looking at the specs right, it's essentially like an RTX, a professional version of the RTX 2070. And what I found interesting is the single slot cooler design. Do you know why that is, or how they can get away with that on a professional card versus, you know, the gamer cards are almost always dual slot or even sometimes triple slot coolers?
You know, it's interesting. I observed the same thing you did, Paul. Great minds think alike. And yeah, actually, it's a little bit longer card, so it's extended. It's a little bit of a different design setup. So the way NVIDIA went with their consumer cards, you've got dual axial fans. It's dual slot, and the fans are over the GPU. A little bit more centrally situated. This has the blower style fan at the back end of the card. It pulls cool air in, exhausts it out the IO plate as well, and a little bit out the front of the card. It pushes to the back of the system where that airflow is probably going out the back of the chassis. In pro applications, I think thermally, it's probably a better design. Because you are going to have cases where you might have multiple of these in a render box. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I think the profile itself lends itself to that as well. But yeah, it's an interesting observation because, you know, they went with this design for what is essentially a RTX 2060, RTX 2070 class GPU. It's a TU106 GPU. So, you know, not that much different. 8 gigs of GDDR6. Thermally, not that much different. I think it's probably clock different. I'd have to go through and pull up the clock speeds and all that good stuff. But yeah, I think it's specifically designed for those applications where you've got multiple in the slot and then thermally pushing that airflow to the IO plate or to the back of the chassis. That's
total.
My
total system power, it's using a lot less than a lot of other cards. So it's at about 234 watts total system power under load. Whereas, say, the 2080 Ti we have on there is 381 watts, almost double. So you have, you know, a lower power threshold
totally.
That you need to cool. So it's not generating as much heat to begin with. And yeah, you're generally going to be putting these in workstations or servers that have generally controlled climates and stuff. That's going to help as well. Where with the consumer cards, you know, you're going to have your customers who were sticking them in, you know, 90 degree rooms and all kinds of other stupid stuff that you have to keep under warranty. So you have to keep safer margins on those anyways.
Yeah. 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 If you look at this card, it's about on par with an RTX 2060. In like, if you just looked at standard gaming, Marco actually ran some numbers on things like Final Fantasy and Far Cry 5. And so if you look at the performance of those, it's kind of like RTX 2060, maybe, 1070 Ti kind of class, not 1070, faster than 1070, a little bit, well, it looks like it's actually slightly faster, for example, in Far Cry, slightly faster than RTX 2060. So right about that performance-wise, and when you think about some of the RTX 2060 cards that are out there, you could see that where they could, you know, you could maybe envision a single-slot design with that power envelope. I don't know. It's an interesting...
If you're getting this to game and not put the pro workloads on, you're kind of doing it wrong.
Right, you're doing it wrong. If you're spending a grand on this card and you're gaming with it, yeah, you're thinking the wrong box. But so that's the Quadro RTX 4000. I think the folks at NVIDIA, you know, keep driving the turning the crank on this new technology. I think it's encouraging. We've also heard, by the way, from NVIDIA senior management, AMD senior management, that ray tracing is in their future as well. No real specifics there, but that they think that's an important technology, as one would have to agree. DLSS is kind of an NVIDIA-ism, an NVIDIA trick with Tensor Cores, and who knows, maybe AMD will come out with something similar and sort of specialized engine for image cleanup and post-processing. I don't know, but it's encouraging to see this, you know, get out now into the smart folks that know how to use this technology to create fun stuff, right? Yeah, that's the idea anyways. But let's move on. And Brittany, I'm gonna pepper you with this one. And then we'll jump over to Paul and torture him for a while. But let's talk about Apex Legends, because you've reported quite a bit on that game, which has absolutely blown up.
So
50 million strong now, right?
So for those who are not familiar with Apex Legends, it kind of came out of nowhere, honestly. It is by the developers, Respawn Entertainment. So the developers behind Titanfall and Titanfall 2. And we reported on it possibly coming out about a day or two before it did, the rumors flying. But up until then, there had really been nothing. And then it came out and it was an immediate success. There were 2.5 million active users within 24 hours. And as of right now, when it's been about a month, there are 50 million. So just an incredible number of active users, especially considering its competition. Fortnite, for example, it took that game about 4 months to get to 45 million users. So just phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal growth. And there seems to be a lot coming with it. There's rumors of a battle pass being released on March 12th, as well as some new heroes, including Octane, who we also reported on a couple of weeks ago. And they've also been very communicative with their player base. So they seem to be so far doing everything right. And a lot of people are enjoying this game.
Yeah. You know, and what's interesting as well is that, and I'm not sure if you guys have had any experience with the developer before, but what I'm seeing for how they are interacting with the community, they're all over it. They're really seem responsive. So Respawn is the developer, and Respawn Entertainment really just seemed to be on the ball with cleaning up, you know, cheaters and, you know, just getting, you know, direct interface with the community and really working it hard. It's impressive. I think, you know, when you look at Epic Games, the big game distribution house that they are, you know, it's like, okay, what's really behind the game? Well, it's the developer that, you know, brings that passion, and kudos to them for bringing a quality product and then supporting it well, you know, afterwards. Right.
And I think, so too, with considering how much has happened with EA, the fact that so far they're letting Respawn Entertainment kind of do what they want and approach it in a good way, I think is also hopefully a good sign for EA as well, especially after the Star Wars fiasco and loot box fiasco.
No question about it. It's interesting. Just all of this, the whole battle royale genre is just exploding. And I mean, Fortnite just was, you know, huge. You know, before that, there was the PUBG rage. And what's refreshing is just to see, you know, this game take off to for folks. You know, to find something new after Fortnite. And now the folks at Epic Games are scrambling a little bit.
They've lost 46% of their users. That has gone down in the last month. That's a pretty considerable number, especially for a game that's only, I mean, with something Apex Legends, it's only been out for a month.
Yeah. And that's what I was referring to. I mean, when you think about large distribution houses like Epic Games, and you know, the fact that sometimes they can just swallow stuff up, you know, and it just loses luster after a while or touch with the community. I'm not sure if that was the case necessarily with Fortnite. I think what happened was, and I don't know if you guys give me your theories on this, but I think what happened was people, you know, really got into this battle royale genre. They have made huge business models on it to, you know, where the streamers are making big money with Fortnite, and you know, the gamers, the pro gamers and all that good stuff. People are Fortnite coaches. And then somebody came out and replicated that arena, that fun factor, those exciting elements of battle royale in a new game. And it was something new from a totally different publisher, from a totally different developer. And it was like, hey, let's go check that out. You know, it's like the attention span of a kitten with catnip, right?
My theory behind it is I think Apex Legends just has a very similar but different target audience. And I think one of the reasons Fortnite has done so well is because children and teenagers are essentially our target audience, or at least the audience that they picked up. Right. And so a lot of the things they have done have been aimed at that demographic. And so while they've had this huge user base, I think they've also isolated a lot of potential players who might be into the battle royale genre. And so Apex Legends comes, you know, it's from a good developer behind some really popular and well-loved games. And the way they've marketed the game is very different than Fortnite. So I think maybe that's part of the reason, too. There's been such a huge demographic shift.
Yeah. John Trigger says... No, I think you might be right. It's a little bit different. It's got some different a different approach to it. John Sugar says EA doesn't need to do any shady crap. Fortnite have established the battle pass and cosmetics selling business model. The community is fine with it. EA can follow that. So, hey, yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's amazing. You know, every year, you know, we look at esports and the growth in the industry, and it just seems to keeps going. It's like mind blowing how pervasive gaming is now. And it used to be that, you know, when we started out back in 99, God, I'm dating myself. you know, computing was fun and we gamed and we were sort of, I don't know. I want to say we were a little bit embarrassed by it. Oh yeah, I'm a computer geek and I play computer games. Now it's like, no, you're a rock star if you're a good gamer, right? Yeah.
I think it's also a case study in the power and popularity of streaming and what influence that has. Because yes, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe like Dr. Disrespect and Ninja, you know, both two very popular streamers are Apex partners. I think they're getting paid to stream this by EA. Wow. And I think that's helped generate some of the buzz as well.
Certainly doesn't hurt.
No, definitely not. That's only good advertisement.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know that there's lots of corporate sponsorship that goes on. And I think that makes sense. You know, brands want to get behind folks that are influential in the community, whether it be, you know, at places, properties on the web or on venues like Twitch and certainly YouTube and all that good stuff. So, yeah, why not? And as long as it's all disclosed and everybody's up front, right. I mean, and you can kind of tell if somebody's waving the Apex Legends flag, you know, you know.
Yeah.
and there's no harm, no foul there, right? So good stuff.
It's amazing to me too how much money the free-to-play games can generate through their in-game purchases. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you know, Apex Legends and Fortnite are both free games. You don't have to pay to play.
Look at League of Legends.
And they're generating tons of cash, which is just mind-boggling to me.
So you wonder what's the revenue streams? Is it level up and armor, you know, buying the, you know, those microtransactions, or are we talking streaming and where
cosmetics?
Where
does this come in?
Yeah, the cosmetics are really getting the skins and the custom weapons and things like that. That seems to be the strong appeal. And
people want
to
show off their bling,
right?
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I mean, yeah, the in-game transactions. Yeah,
I think you'd be surprised how much people are willing to spend on that stuff too, even on mobile. On like, you know, I've been playing Tunes funny on my smartphone, and there's that in another game where some of the purchases are really expensive. I mean, they have packages that are $99, others that are like 30, or cheaper ones that are 10, and people are buying that stuff, and I'm looking at it like, wow, that's crazy to me that there are people that are spending that money, but they do. And for these developers, it's just, if you have a hit like Apex Legends or Fortnite, it's just a cash cow.
Hunt the whales. Yeah. How much money I've spent on Pokemon Go.
All right.
Oh, that was great. John is our producer, and he just chimed in from behind the curtain. That was awesome, John. Thank you. Oh, funny stuff. All right. Well, let's move on that note. Pokemon Go. to something that Paul's been playing with, the Alienware AW988 wireless headset and AW959 Elite mouse review that you did, Paul. Boy, let me tell you what, Alienware has got to get a little bit better with the branding, because the AW and insert your numeral designator doesn't do it for me. But these look like pretty cool little peripherals. What do you think?
Yeah, the branding obviously sucks. I mean, they're not, they have their whole alien
thing. They're going to hate us.
They can play on, and they don't. It's just, you know, AW988. Yeah, that's real cool. But beyond the model names, there are a couple of good products. I especially like the wireless gaming headset that I'm wearing it now. I'll show you here in a second.
Ooh.
You know. it's kind of a neat looking headset, especially for an Alienware product. They didn't go over the top, even with the RGB lighting. There's, you know, they have the Alien logos and then a few accent lines, and that's it. Even on the top of the headband where it says Alienware, that part's not lit up. So it's not in your face, you know, gaudy. It's just, you know, decent looking gaming headset. It's also one of the more comfortable gaming headsets I've worn. It's exceptionally light at 380 grams. I think it's almost or around a full 100 grams lighter than the HP Omen Mind Frame that I reviewed. I think it was last month. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's a decent headset. It's wireless. It connects through a 2.4 gigahertz wireless USB dongle instead of Bluetooth. I wish it did have Bluetooth connection so I could, you know, connect it to my iPhone, because, you know, Apple had to get rid of the 3.5 millimeter headphone jack. So it's not Bluetooth. You can't get to the phones that don't have that jack. It does come with the wired cable, have, you know, a standard headphone jack. This is also a 7.1 virtual surround sound headset, which, you know, a lot of people scoff at the virtual surround because it's never going to replicate, you know, a true surround where you have speakers in front and the sides and the back. But for what it is, I found that it worked at least as well as, and really better than other virtual surround solutions that I've worn. It did feel like that I could hear around in some cases, not to the same extent as having actual speakers behind you, but I found that it did actually work pretty decent. What it doesn't have is the real low-end boom that a lot of you know, modern headsets like Beats and that sort of thing really push. I mean, they're all pushing the deep, heavy bass, you know, kind of above all else. And this one doesn't have that. If you're looking for the, you know, just a hard hit, you don't get that here. You do get bass. So, I mean, it doesn't sound tinny. It's not like a laptop speaker or anything like that. It's just not that hard hitting. The overall sound quality is, I would say, it's good or very good. I don't think it's on par with the $230 MSRP. It's beating kind of in the premium space for headsets there. And it's, you know, the audiophile quality, but it does sound pretty good for music. I didn't really have many complaints with it. And in games, like I said, the virtual shroud seemed to work fine. And unlike the mind frame, you can turn off the 7.1 virtual shroud if you're listening to music, which makes a big difference. Because if you have that virtual shroud when you're listening to music, not playing games, I mean just listening to music, it doesn't sound as well with that turned on. There's a noticeable audio quality if you disable that. There's also EQ controls through their software, so you can tune it. There's a whole bunch of different presets, but you can also custom tune it to whoever you like. The big thing for me, though, like I said, is it's lightweight, it's comfortable. It has the soft rubber coating on it. It's kind of sleek. I just like how it feels. It sounds decent enough. If you have the money and you're willing to spend a little bit extra for an Alienware product, it's a decent headphone. If you're looking for the hard-hitting bass, you're going to want to look elsewhere. Let me ask you on that.
Before you jump off to the mouse, yeah, question. So when you say bass, so one of the problems I have with just about every pair of earbuds I've ever heard, other than Bose, IE2s, and maybe one or two other brands, is that the bass response is completely not there. Like I put in earbuds into my ears, and I have particular ears. I've got a couple of guitars behind me. I listen to a lot of music. Anyways, it just sounds like there's like no bass channel at all. And so for me, I don't look for heavy booming bass. I just look for natural bass. It needs to be tight. I don't want sloppy. I don't want, vibration, which causes distortion. I want clean bass, firm bass that sounds like a bass. You know what I mean? So do you have that there, or is it like you were just expecting more boom crash from a gaming headset?
It's closer to that than what you're going to get with probably other headsets that you've tried. Other than, I'm not talking about, I know you like the Bose that you have. I'm talking about other headsets that you've tried. It's probably closer to what you're looking for than that. But like I said, it's not like an audiophile quality headset. So it's not going to be picture perfect bass, but it's not overbearing. It doesn't have that rattle that you're talking about. There is bass there. There is some boom. It's just not like
it's full. Boom.
It doesn't rattle.
So it's a more quiet studio sound.
Yeah.
You just set off theory with that.
Yeah. But to be fair, there's a lot of people who do like that. That's why it's so popular, like I said, on the Beats and other headphones like that. There's a lot of people that want that, whether they don't know better or they just prefer that. So you don't get that here. Yeah. But it is decent from top to bottom. I would say it's decent. It's at least good. It doesn't sound bad in any particular area. And it's not like, super excellent in any area. It's just a good all-around headset. And comfort-wise, it's the best I've worn so far. It's right up there. So, moving on to the mouse.
It's probably pretty balanced. I think that's what I'm hearing. You're saying it's balanced tonally.
It's balanced. And you can tune it through the EQ controls, which do make a difference. I mean, they're not fake controls. When you're adjusting the sliders, you do hear a difference depending on what you like, what you don't like, what music you're listening to or whatever. I just do wish it had Bluetooth, though, because I'd love to pair this with my phone and just use this as kind of a daily driver, and I can't do that. But maybe for the next version, especially for $230. Give me Bluetooth. But anyway,
moving on to the mouse.
The cleverly named AW959. Not to be confused with the AW958, I think is our previous generation one. I think that's what it was. I'm not entirely sure.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, sure does. this one has the rubberized coating on the palm rest, the same as the headphones do. So they've really adopted that for these products, which I happen to like. My daily driver for a long while up until recently was a Myonix mouse that's, rubberized coating throughout the whole thing. And I just love how that feels. And you have that on the palm rest. The two main clickers are aluminum plates instead of plastic. So it's really lightweight as well, like the headset. It's really lightweight at 190 grams out of the box. So it's, you have the lightweight design, yet it's still durable with the aluminum plates. It also comes with 4-5 gram weights that you can, you shove them in the mouse's butt, basically is what you do, instead of taking off like a, most mouse where you can adjust the weights, you take off the bottom plate and, you know, whether you have to unscrew it or do whatever and put them in there. This one, they just plug into the back. You just push them in. They're in. You want to take them out. You push them again and they pop right out. So it's as easy
Paul,
as
Paul, stop with the visuals, Paul.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you don't want to picture the mouse. And, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. And it's modular in the sense that it comes with a pair of extra wings as well. The picture that you guys see on the front page of the review, it's kind of a slender mouse. You can widen that with the wings that it comes with. One of them is a little wider on the right to accommodate your pinky. The one on the left that you swap out, it has the one that comes on their stock has 2 buttons. You can plop the other wing on there that has 4 buttons. So if you're playing a game where you need the extra controls, you can slap that on there. And those connect magnetically. They're really easy to pull off and put on, and they're secure once they're on there. It's not like you're going to move your mouse around and they're going to fall off. So it's just really well designed in that aspect. And if you prefer, I know we're running out of time here, so I'll wrap this up. But if you prefer a longer mouse, you can also pull the base out. Sorry for the extra visual, but you can pull that palm rest out a couple of notches to make it longer if you prefer that.
That actually sounds kind of nice, especially because Christopher and I will often share a desktop, and our hand size is noticeably different. And so we often prefer a different mouse. And so it sounds like a neat idea that you have that option to change the size up, especially if you have different users using it.
Yeah, if you're sharing a mouse, that's probably the best use case scenario for something like this. I don't like that when you pull it out, it leaves a little gap in between the buttons and the top of the base. Just kind of a visual thing. It doesn't really bother you when you're using it. But it is neat that as far as the modularity goes and being able to adjust the length, that all of it is just super easy, super simple. It is, if you're building a modular mouse, to me, this is kind of the blueprint that you want to follow. As far as usability, it has a 12,000 DPI sensor, which not the highest on the market, but higher than anyone is realistically going to need, especially if you're a competitor gamer, that's thousands higher than what you're going to need. So it's a decent mouse. Again, like the headset, it's, you know, on the higher side price-wise of what it's competing against. But if you're looking for a modular mouse, one with the soft dust rubber finish and, you know, you can adjust the length, there you go.
All right. Well, hey, thank you, Paul. That's good stuff. We appreciate it. Check out that review at hothardware.com. We have to wrap because I know Johnny's got to get on to the next gig. Sorry to cut it short here, but we will drop a link in the chat here for the last little bit we were going to cover. Check out Intel's latest spoiler, a Spectre-style hardware exploit that leaks private data. They've got a handle on it, but it's something you should know if you're running an Intel system. Stop by hothardware.com where you can find us on the web, twitter.com/hothardware, youtube.com/hothardware, hot hardware vids. Thumb up, subscribe, join us here. We are going to be running Wednesdays now at 7 p.m. Eastern, and that's where you will find us from now on. And until then, next Wednesday, thanks for stopping by.